guys! This week's episode is brought to you by Universal Furniture. And if you're interested in getting 15% off living room furniture, you're trying to furnish your living room, or if you want to win $10,000 worth of this stuff, you should listen to the ad later in the podcast and hit up universalfurniture.com/YHL to learn more. Good luck!
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing some no-brainer ways to cut down on paper clutter around your house. We learn how to sell secondhand stuff for more money, and we reveal how some good karma saved a rough day at the beach house.
Another week, another tile saga at the beach house.
This is behind-the-scenes tile saga. We did not even mention it in our blog post. A lot is happening at the beach house, finally. After like months and months of waiting for it to be to the fun part, we're at the fun part. So we had trim going in, and we're using a lot of the original trim, which is really cool and full of character. Old doors with cool latches and amazing glass knobs. Just like really fun old details going back into this old house that has been gutted for so long, we almost forgot what it looked like with walls.
Yeah, it's starting to look ungutted and actually like closer to finished.
Like, I almost feel like I'm close to furnishing. I know I have to redo the floors before I can drag my furniture in, and then I shouldn't drag it. I should use like some pads so I don't scratch it up.
After floor refinishing.
But so anyway.
Yeah, in that post, we talked about having tiled, but I left out this story of tiling the shower pans because it was too much for that blog post. There was a lot going on already.
And it was also, we were not ready yet to talk about it, guys.
No, I had not mentally come to terms. I promise we don't like intentionally, maybe we do subconsciously like attract drama to our DIY projects. It just
no, there was literally, I had a thought that I was like, maybe we just suck at DIY and we should just freaking stop. Like maybe we should just never DIY stuff, which is ridiculous because just because you have a few hard moments doesn't mean you should just give up. It's like saying, oh, I had a hard time learning to walk as a baby, so I'll just crawl the rest of my life. Like, right. We need to get past this stuff.
I think just all the beach house stuff has a little bit of amped up stress because we're away from our house. We have to do a lot more planning to get our tools there. And there's like always a ticking clock because we have to, you know, work before the sun sets or before we have to hop back in the car and drive home.
Right. There's no working air conditioning. It's just like a completely different work zone than we're used to. At home, when you live in your house and you're DIYing as you live there, of course there's stress involved with that and dust and all the stuff that you have to live with. But at least you're near your tools, you're near your kids. It feels easier.
You can go
home
to your own bed.
Exactly.
Or go upstairs to your own bed, whatever.
You're not like staying in a hotel or losing light that doesn't exist because your house doesn't have light yet,
right.
You know?
So let's go back to the story that happened this trip. So we had decided to just take a Wednesday when my parents were watching our kids to go out there and try to tile 3 shower pans. So we didn't use any drop-ins in the house, so we had to tile the floors of each of the showers. We figured like, oh, we can knock out that in probably 6 hours or so.
Right. They had already been prepped. We were using this system called the Schluter system, which our contractor and like 3 other people who do hardcore tiling said they really loved. So we felt like, oh, if anything, it's going to be easy. And we'd already done 4 room floors of tile. And this was a much smaller area. It's 3 little shower pans. So stupidly, mistake number one is we overestimated our time efficiency. And we said, we could definitely do 3 in one day. Not considering that we drive for 2.5 hours there and 2.5 hours back.
Yeah.
So a lot of our trips to the beach house, we like check in with the contractor. If we do a day trip, we're not doing one project, let alone 3 tiling projects.
No, we typically have about 3 hours there. We were going to stay a little bit later this time, but still it was a tight window in which to try to accomplish these things. So we got there about 11. We spent about an hour going over things with our contractor, and it wasn't till about noon that we finally kind of buckled down and started going. I started tiling one shower pan and Sherry started laying out the other one. And so we thought we were moving quickly, but to be honest, these are actually the first shower pans that we have ever tiled because the last time we did a shower in our first house, there was
a tub. We had a tub.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we just did the 3 walls and they took forever.
Yes.
So we knew shower walls would take forever. But guys, we had just done floors, much bigger floors than shower floors.
Yeah. But what we didn't really account for was the fact that we were using smaller scale tile. And you still have a lot of edges. You still have 4 edges in a shower. And it's oftentimes those little cuts around an edge, not to mention the cuts around the drain, that end up eating up a lot of time.
Exactly.
So I think we finished the first one like after about like 3 hours.
Yeah, I think 2.5. And I was like, okay, well, we spent a lot of time like setting up the saw and getting ready. And then the second and third, you don't have that prep. Often the thin set's already mixed and you can continue into the next room and use it.
But the next shower we did, the second one, was that one in our master where we're doing that kind of hex pattern where we're taking out all the black tiles in that star shape and putting in blue tiles, which we learned last time is very tedious. So we started that, and again, it was tedious.
And I had already, while John was doing the first shower floor, I was prepping the second one, figuring out exactly where the stars had to go to line up in all angles. I was popping out the black tiles and getting the blue tiles ready to go in. So it's annoying, but it's so beautiful when you're done, like completely worth the effort and kind of brainless. Like you can get into a rhythm and be really good. So I thought, I'm prepping this while John's doing the other one. And then we're like, okay, first shower done. On to the second one, which is already prepped. We're going to fly through this.
Yeah, I think we were kind of finishing the second shower like around 6:30 or so. And we were hoping to leave no later than like 7 or 7:30 because we still had a 2.5 hour drive ahead of us. But then as we were looking at the tile and we were setting the drain, the Schluter system comes with its own drain system that you pop in sort of towards the end and then tile around it. We couldn't get the shower drain to sit low enough. It was sitting slightly above the tile, which is a problem in a shower because you need all the water to flow down into the drain.
And what would have happened is, like a donut, it would have collected around the drain but not quite risen high enough to go up and into the drain.
Yeah, it wouldn't go over the lip.
Yeah, you don't want water to ever have to go up and into something.
So our contractor had explained to us early in the day how to set those drains because we'd never used them before. So we called him over. He was very kind enough to come after his dinner and look at it with us and was like, yeah, this is a problem. And it turns out, long story short, that we had made the thin set around the drain too thin. We'd spread it very thin because I, being paranoid about the slope of the shower pan, you know, you want a shower pan to slope gradually from the edges to the center. I was making sure, especially around that middle part, that I wasn't putting my thin set on too thick because I didn't want to counteract that slope. And there also was a really sharp dive right into the drain. And so we had set our tiles pretty much to follow that, thinking that the drain would sink right down next to them. So basically the contractor was like, yeah, guys, you got to pull up all the tiles around your drain and sort of go back like another 6 to 10 inches.
Rookie mistake, guys. We were totally aiming for extra slope and we really overshot it.
We got too much slope, so much so the drain was like, hold up, folks.
The drain was popping up like a woodchuck out of a hole on a golf course. And we needed to take the tile out in probably a 30-inch radius. So I don't know.
No, not that much. Like maybe 20 max.
Yeah, 20-inch radius. I don't know if you've ever tiled two shower floors and the sun is setting and you still didn't do the third.
Yeah,
and
you
then
think
you're going
done.
Backwards. It's demoralizing.
Well, and not only demoralizing, but we had to make a game plan as to sort of how are we going to solve this. You know, we decided we needed to fix the tile slope right then and there and just stay a little bit later because if we let it all set, then we'd have to like jackhammer it up later. While it was still wet, it was still workable.
It was like half a blessing to discover it before it was too late. But
didn't
also,
feel like a blessing.
At the time, there was like deep breathing. I think at one point, John said, I need to go take some deep breaths so I don't have a panic attack.
Yes.
To which now sounds very dramatic. But in the moment, I was with him. Like we both were like, what have we done? We spent all day. Now we have to rip it all up.
Yeah. It just felt like I was on the brink of feeling accomplished and it was all stripped away from me. And then also this kind of panic of like, the sun is setting, we've got to fix this in a certain amount of time, and then what are we going to do tonight? Because we either have to drive back really late and change the plans with my parents, or do we spend the night here? And we called my parents and sort of talked it through with them, and they were very gracious in inviting the kids to stay over for a sleepover with them, because we realized it would be really helpful if we could come back the next morning to just check it all and clean it a little bit before the tile had fully set and firmed up. It'd be much easier while it was still workable a little bit.
And if we could figure out a place to spend the night, it probably would only be like an hour or two to finish the last shower pan, because we had all of our stuff set up, it was ready, we're leaving the saw at the house, we're leaving the thin set at the house, so it was worth not going home and having to come back a separate trip to do that third shower.
Right. So Sherry called around, texted around to some of our friends from Cape Charles because we've met a lot of neighbors, actually a lot of people from Richmond who also have houses there. And there was one woman who had a long time ago offered us a place to crash because she had renovated her own house years ago and realized how helpful it is to have like a place to crash at. So we contacted her, but her place was occupied by someone, but she referred us to one of her friends.
Yeah, she was like, hold on, I'm checking with a friend. Like before I could even say like, no, that feels weird. We don't even know your friend, you know? And there's like the dots because she's texting and she goes, oh, you know this woman. Apparently you rescued her dog, or John rescued her dog.
Yes, if you guys remember back in episode 34 when I was a local neighborhood hero and I had found a dog wandering out in the snow and I went on a pursuit to locate her. Turns out that these people also have a house in Cape Charles. So I count this as good karma coming full circle.
I totally do. You saved their dog in the snow, and then we had a place to sleep. And we literally, she was like, here's how you can get in. We slept there. Maybe 7 or 8 hours later, we popped up out of bed, put everything back the way it was, and snuck out of the house.
Well, you make it sound simpler than it was, because we had not brought anything with us. Like, we had to go to the grocery store to buy contact solution and contact cases, because we didn't have any of that stuff. We actually used their washer and dryer to clean our clothes, because we had no change of clothes for the next morning.
We were very sweaty, if you guys don't remember. Yeah. House with no AC plus tiling is like hot yoga.
That's, you know? That's really why I was having the panic attack, because I was just picturing myself putting that gross shirt back on.
Oh, it's so, so gross.
So yeah, we were very, very lucky and thankful. And the next day felt like a brand new day. Like, I think we were both sort of...
We were holding our breath until we saw the tile the next morning. Yeah. Because the sun had set and we were like using our phones and this little light we had. And so when we went in, I was like, this is either going to be terrible or it's going to be fine. And one shower, I didn't do anything except clean the top off and everything looked perfect. I just couldn't fully see it at night. But once I like, you know, rubbed the excess thin set off, it looked great. And the other shower, the one with the little blue stars in it, I ended up popping up a few just to reposition them. They're pretty easy to pop out individually. And got it to a place where you never could tell that we had sort of dismantled each of these showers halfway through and then redid them. I think the slope turned out great. Our contractor came through and was like, wow, that's, you guys did it.
Yes. And also we had learned our lesson for the third one. We were able to complete the third one the next morning. It was much faster than the other two, partially because we were using a basket weave tile. So the square tiles were much easier to cut and arrange than the hex tiles were. I also learned an important lesson about thinset. You know, we've tiled a lot of things, but I think over the years I've learned that I personally like my thinset a little bit thinner because it's just easier to work with. But I realized, especially in this case, making it actually on the thick side was really helpful because it helped me keep that height that I needed to make that drain level with the tile.
Long story long, it was another dramatic day at the beach house. We cried, we sweated a lot.
Yep.
We found a random place to stay that ended up being karmically linked to a dog we rescued. And in the morning, you know what? It was a new day. We finished it up. We got back to the kids. But man, at night, it kind of felt like the end of the world.
Yep. Although we are still facing 3 showers we have to tile.
Which I added up. Do you want to know?
Nope, I don't want to know. You can tell me later.
It's 8 walls.
Nope. La la la. I didn't hear it. That music means I've got a quick tip for you guys, and this one is about pricing things to sell, like on Craigslist or whatever. I heard this really interesting story on a podcast called Hidden Brain a few months ago. It was about eBay specifically, but I think it applies to sort of Craigslist or yard sales or anything. Basically, here's the summary of it. If you're trying to price something to sell quickly, price it at like a round even number, like $50 or $100.
If you wanted to sell quickly, do $5.
Well, yeah, just give it for free, I guess. But if you want to sell it for a higher amount or a specific amount, then use a very specific number, like $55 or $112. So I guess the people who did this study of eBay auctions, they hypothesized the reason is when you use a precise number, it indicates to the potential buyers that there's a lot of thought behind that pricing. Like if you say this is $112, the buyer probably thinks, well, there's probably a reason it's $112.
Right. It sounds less arbitrary, like throwing it at the wall to see what happens.
Yeah. If you're just like, it's $50, it signals to the buyer, like they may not really have thought about this price. There might be more wiggle room. And so they're more likely to be negotiated down. They actually use this as an example to explain how Uber does their pricing. You know how Uber has surge pricing, you know, when they're busy times. They say right. Uber is very intentional about saying like the surge is 1.8 times or like 2.1 time. Because if Uber just said, it's twice as much, it sounds like it's just kind of arbitrary.
Oh, like we just feel like doubled it.
Yeah, we felt like charging you more. But if you see like 1.7, your head says that there must be a specific algorithm that's saying this is why the value of the ride is 1.7 times more.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I guess the takeaway is if you want something to sell fast, I always say underprice it. And I do underprice with round numbers. So I guess I follow that by accident. Like at a yard sale, I'll just be like, everything here is a dollar. Everything here in this zone is $5, you know?
But if you said it was $1.15.
That would not be a good yard sale.
No one will buy it because no one carries around nickels and dimes.
Don't do that at a yard sale. But it is interesting. Maybe if on Craigslist or on like a buy sell trade group on Facebook, you want something and you don't want to get bid down. I mean, another way to do that is just say firm. because a lot of people will say like $50 OBO, and OBO means or best offer. And then if they say firm, they just mean like, listen, I ain't playing.
And I'll put a link in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast to the episode of Hidden Brain that I heard this on so that you guys can check it out. I'll also include a link to the actual study itself that they reference in case you want to double check that, because I'm sure my summary right here was not perfectly scientific. Okay, Sherry, I have a quiz for you.
Okay.
Because we are here at the very end of 2017, I'm being sarcastic.
I can't handle that right now. It is only halfway through.
But you know what? Bear has already announced their color of the year, 2018.
My first thought was Bear Grylls? Who are we talking about?
No.
Bear who?
B-E-H-R, the paint company.
Okay.
It's actually their first year doing it, so maybe that's why they're trying to get out the gate ahead of everyone else.
Right.
Here in August. So I am going to give you 5 paint colors. They are all real Bear paint colors. All of them are actually on their list of trends, but they have singled out one as the single color of the year.
Oh, what could it be? Is it going to be some millennial pinkish color?
I don't know. You love this kind
of
like...
I do. I like the psychology of the paint. I'm thrown off by saying it's the color of 2018, because how do we know what the color 2018 is yet?
So I'm going to give you the paint color name as well as sort of a description of the color okay. so that you know what it is.
And none of that is doctored.
No, they're all real Bear paint colors that they think are trending for 2018. You just have to pick out the one that they think
is the
paint color of the year.
Okay.
Number one, In the Moment, which is a cool spruce blue.
All right. Everybody always loves blue. I bet they sell a lot of blue paint.
Number two, Unplugged, an earthy olive brown.
I feel like olive brown is just only like in a very hipster cool zone. It's not universal right now. That's like sort of 70s to most people.
Number three, Life is Good, which they describe as an energizing yellow. I would describe it as an orange.
Orange is a very hard paint color to use unless you're using it in very small doses. That is definitely not the color of the year, I don't think.
Number four, Quiet Time, which is a foggy gray green.
I mean, that's very of the moment. That sounds the closest to me so far.
And lastly, Constellation Blue, which is a deep regal blue, like with a little bit of purple in it.
Well, that would be very copy-ish of other people's.
Of Shadow.
Yes, remember Benjamin Shadow?
Moore's exactly. Of this year.
Right. I'm going to say it's between the first one. That,
in the
like,
moment.
In the moment, that bluish. Everybody loves the blue. That's like universal. Or the grayish green you
said. Quiet Time.
I'll go Quiet Time.
Oh, you're so close.
Oh, was it number one?
Yes, In the Moment. Again, all of these were on their list of trending colors.
Don't you think it's funny? None of them were pink.
Oh, they do have one on their trending one that's called Positively Pink. There's like 20 of them.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, they describe that this cool, tranquil spruce blue is inspired by nature and is a soothing, restorative coalescence of blue, gray, and green.
Wow.
Yes. I think they really were going for all these names being like Quiet Time, Unplugged. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot
like,
of that going on.
You're like, I'm in a renovation. All I want is a name that sounds like an escape. So yes. I'll get Quiet Time.
It literally says, in name and color, this hue speaks to our desire to take a break, be present, and recharge.
Huh. It's like yoga for your paint colors. Nope.
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 It is not.
It's nothing to do with yoga. It's like Confucius for your paint colors.
Sure, if you say so. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to all of Bear's 2018 colors so you guys can get prepped like 4 months in advance.
Get ready.
These are coming at you. That'll be in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast.
Okay, but now we have a listener question. And it comes from across the pond.
Across the pond.
The place where there are Blarney stones.
Oh, don't.
And Luck of the Irish.
Do not fall into stereotypes, please.
I'm just trying to do my accent. It makes me want to Irish dance, which would sound like this on a podcast. Now for Simone's question.
You got French at the end.
I was a little Jamaican.
Hi, Sherry and John. My name's Simone, and I'm calling from Dublin in Ireland. Every week after I listen to your podcasts, I try to take some sort of little tip or trick or advice, and I go off and try to do it in my day. I've even gone one time looking for an escape room because I thought it was a great idea. But the one thing I wanted to ask you was your advice, or and really this is maybe an SOS, is what do you do with paper? Because I seem to have got on top of everything in my home. But paper is my absolute nemesis, and I would love your advice on just how to manage it better. So thanks so much. I love your podcast and all the work you do. Take care. Bye-bye.
Oh, paper clutter.
It's hard.
I would say that the way we deal with in our house is kind of twofold. One is just put in some efforts to minimize it coming in the first place. And then the second is have a zero tolerance policy for it laying around.
Right. Like everything needs a place, but that's not helpful unless we're specific. So we're going to drill down and get very specific.
Yes. Let's first talk about minimizing though. One big source of paper clutter for us is mail. And we talked several episodes ago about an app called Paper Karma to help you unsubscribe for unwanted junk mail. We use that, definitely cut down. We don't use it anymore because we sort of got
to- You have to pay for it. So yeah. We paid for it for like 3 months and we were like, we got it way down. I mean, we still get a little bit of junk mail, but it's not crazy.
Yeah. So I would recommend using that briefly just to easily unsubscribe from junk mail that you don't want to get because that will immediately get rid of stuff. I think also, you know, we do things like we go paperless on as many bills as we can. So we're not getting bills in the mail. They're just coming to our email. And even simple things like, you know, if you don't need a receipt at a store, like refuse it or throw it away right there.
Right. Like you don't want to have to go through your purse later and say, why do I have 500 receipts? If you don't need the receipts, nothing is worse than later having to sort through a bag or a counter at home and all these things you don't need that you could have thrown away at the time. You like kind of saved it for later. It's mean to do to yourself. Like just take care of it in the moment.
And I think that also leads into that second part about having a zero tolerance policy for it, because when any sort of paper comes into our house, whether it's mail or coming home from school or whatever, we really, really do our best to deal with it right then and there.
Exactly. Like it's almost like you need a brainless drop zone for everything. I'll give specific examples because that's always been helpful to me. When a magazine comes in, it doesn't sit on the counter or go upstairs or move around on different surfaces. It immediately goes into a basket in the living room where all the magazines live. It's nice because when I want to read a magazine, I know where to go and I don't have them on every surface. Like they go in a spot that's mindless. We can do it in our sleep. School papers, we've talked about this in episode one, but it's basically like we have a tray in our office and things that come home from the backpack, I throw them in the basket in the office. They're not on the counter in the kitchen cluttering it up. And then I go through that every week or two. I pull out the art I like and the paperwork we need to keep and everything else can go away. Obviously, I don't put things in that basket I need to deal with right away.
Right, right. If there's an action item, like you have to sign a permission slip for
right.
a field trip,
I do
that
it
then.
Right away and I put it back in the folder. Also, mail does not have a drop zone. It goes in the trash or the recycle or we deal with it.
Yeah.
And if it's something we can go paperless on, we will put it on our desk to go paperless on and then we will recycle it and never deal with it again.
A big thing is also like our business papers, like when we get invoices from things or even when you get like a bill from the doctor or something. We have a lot of places in our office that we deal with stuff real quickly. For instance, in one of my drawers next to my desk, I have just a little paper tray actually hidden in the drawer.
Yeah, it's like an inbox that he slipped inside of the drawer so you don't see all the paper filling.
Yeah, it's not out looking cluttered, but whenever I get like a check or an invoice or something that we know we're gonna have to keep for our taxes at the end of the year, I just slide it in that drawer into that paper tray so that I can go and deal with it later. And like I usually once a month when I'm sort of updating my QuickBooks for our accountant, I go and I file it in a little accordion folder that I keep as well.
Is it surprising to you guys that of the two of us, John is the spreadsheet person in the relationship?
Yep.
Should not be a surprise by now.
Well, and the printer cabinet that we have in our office has files on the bottom drawer of it. It's actually a file cabinet under the printer. And so we've got places in there where we set a long time ago for like health documents, life insurance documents, you know, whatever sort of paperwork that comes in the mail that I know we might need to keep for future reference. And so when we get it in the mail, I put it right in that file cabinet. So it doesn't get left out somewhere.
Right. I think that's the total key. And for a while, we had a few things that still piled up. One I noticed was coupons and gift cards. They just would end up in the corner of the cabinet in the kitchen because I'd want to remember to grab them on the way out the door. I've learned that for us, it's much smarter to keep gift cards and coupons we're going to use immediately in the car. We have one car, so it's always with us. If you guys have more than one car, you might just try putting them in your wallet or in something you always have on you. The thing that's great about that is if I'm over at Target getting something and I realize I needed to pick something up at Bed Bath & Beyond, oh, I need a coupon. Oh, I already have one. And another tip is that so many coupons now are on phones that if I know it's something I can Google, Bed Bath & Beyond is actually an example of that. I used to keep the Bed Bath & Beyond coupons until I realized you can literally in line, pull it up, they'll scan it from your phone, works like a charm.
We also sometimes use an app called SnipSnap, which you can search for coupons, and you can also upload your own coupons as well to that.
Look around and see what you still have piles of. Another example is we used to have a lot of invitations or RSVP cards.
We're very popular, guys. We get invited to all the things.
You know, like kids' birthday parties, you get a whole bunch of those in the spring or something. There's like a burgeoning of parties you need to remember. What we have decided just works best for us is we write those in our paper planner, which we consult week to week. And we either tuck them in the planner on that week or we write all the details we need and get rid of the invitations. We RSVP right away. To us, that's like dealing with a bill. You boomerang stuff. Get it out of your house. It comes in, you need to pay it. Pay it. Boomerang it back. It comes in, you need to RSVP. RSVP, boomerang it back.
Yeah.
I think even if we had a pin board, they would have stacked on top of each other and gotten crazy. And it's so nice to write them in the planner on the day that it's happening with whatever instruction, like bring a side dish or kids need bathing suits and towels. A lot of people I know do that paperless as well. They just do it on their phone. We tried so hard to get into
using the phone.
For some
reason, we can't get into using a digital calendar between the two of us. I don't know.
I think we just need to look at the week. You know, when you have it open to a spread and you see the 7 days in front of you.
I'm sure you can do that on a phone.
I know. I don't know. There's just something about, sometimes you just like to use the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, a little old school. But I do think we don't really subscribe to the like pin board or magnet on your fridge thing. Because to me, in my experience, having done that in college, actually, is that only bred more paper clutter. Because I was like, oh, I'll just pin it up on this board because that's how I'm going to remember it. But then you do that to everything and suddenly it's overflowing, things are overlapped and you're not seeing the things you're supposed to remember.
Right, and they're not in any sort of chronological order. Like when you put them in a calendar or a day planner, at least it's on the day that you need it, you know?
Yeah. So I think for us, this kind of zero tolerance, the deal with it right away, don't let it sit out, has been the secret to keeping our paper clutter at bay. But I would say the one thing we still struggle with, because we've not solved this perfectly, is kid art craft paper clutter, because both of our children are very
prolific.
Yes, prolific in the art and story writing and scissor cutting department. We actually talked to the ladies at the Home Edit about this sort of after our formal interview. It came up in a side conversation, and a tip they had given us was actually they have the same struggle, and they put a big basket under the kids' desk that just catches all of the clutter. It's not necessarily a trash bin. It's just like a big basket, and they just empty that every day, she said, I think Clea said.
Yeah, she's like, the struggle is real. It fills right up to the brim every day, which made me feel good because I was like, what kind of monsters can make this many clippings? But it turns out all children.
Well, but I think the problem we also have is they're not just the trash and the overflow. It's like the actual creations. Like, what do you do with all those? Because again, they're very prolific. And we've talked about this a bit before, that it does take a bit of ruthlessness to say like what's worth saving and what's not. Some of it goes into like a memory box that we have, a big Tupperware bin where we keep sort of family keepsakes. There's a box for each person in the family. And some of it we also just digitize. Like Sherry will take a picture of it on her phone and keep a folder of that.
Right. And we've made like photo books of our kids' art. And it's great. It looks beautiful. It doesn't seem like the cheater way. It almost seems like the more beautiful, meaningful way to remember their art is to make a book of it.
Way to pat yourself on the back, Mom.
I'm just saying. I think sometimes when we put the art in the garbage, we feel very bad about that.
Right.
Like we're throwing away their
creation. Unless it's really terrible art, then I feel good about it. Like I'm sparing the world from seeing this.
That would be your doodles. I just think we all feel guilty about this, but the way that we have learned to deal with the art is sometimes in bulk it's easier. So again, go back to episode one where I talked about an inbox where I drop all their art and every 2 weeks go through it. But you know, if there's 15 rainbows, it's easy to go through and be like, this is my favorite one of all of them. And I'll put that on the bulletin board or I'll take a photo of that and it will end up in the photo book at the end of the year with all the art.
Well, now that our daughter's getting older, we also can involve her in that process. Like which of these do you want to keep?
Exactly. And I think one more area that might be helpful to people, if you're a catalog and magazine ripper outer like I am, you will have all these sheets of paper and it's like old school Pinterest, right? Like before we had Pinterest, we ripped things out and we made mood boards or we kept binders of the stuff. I have a bunch of old binders. I really never go through them and I go through Pinterest a lot more easily. So what I do, at least with the new ones, I have not converted my old tear sheets, but I have stopped putting new tear sheets into binders because it's just not a method I reference anymore. And I now take photos of them and I upload them to Pinterest. It's actually very easy. I do like 20 sheets at a time. They build up enough where I sit down one day, do it all on like a Saturday morning, upload them to a secret Pinterest board or whatever, and then I have them to reference without having to keep the actual paper, and they go right in the recycling bin.
So I hope that helps, Simone. Obviously, I'm sure there's lots of other good solutions out there and things that have to, you know, work with your own habits in your own home, but that is what has worked for us. If any of you guys have a question that you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, you can leave us a voicemail. The phone number is 571, the number 4, YHLHAP, as in Young House Love has a podcast.
Or Yellow Hornets linger.
Happily.
Happily.
Above.
After.
Oh, pineapples.
Pinterest. We're E.E. Cummings, basically.
So many options for that acronym.
Okay. And we've got things we're digging. We're going to get to that in a second. But first, we have to take a quick break.
So this week's episode is brought to you by Universal Furniture. And we're talking to Neil from Universal, who is telling us how, you know, many people may not know the name Universal, but they've probably seen the furniture somewhere.
Yeah, like Country Living's Lake House of the Year, it's 2017's Lake House, has been decked out fully in Universal Furniture.
But, you know, looking good in pictures and stuff is nice. But Neil was also telling us about how they build it to stand up to real families. Like, they use performance fabrics.
You could look at any of the performance fabrics that we offer and you'd have no idea that, you know, you could spill a glass of red wine and it could be gone, you know, within a matter of minutes.
When anyone says something like that, I always picture myself just dumping a whole glass of something right on the couch.
Full macaroni and cheese dump on the couch just to see how it goes.
Yeah, we actually do that at market, you know, with ketchup and mustard. And it's really cool to see how a lot of these are organic and natural fibers. So the way that that construction and technology is literally built into every fiber, you're not having a struggle to get it out.
Well, let me know if you need any volunteers at next market, because I will happily come just throw some stuff at a couch.
It's a dream job for John.
Yeah, I watch my kids do it all the time and I'm jealous, basically. So you guys remember how Sherry said that they were giving away $10,000 worth of living room furniture? You guys can enter to win at universalfurniture.com/YHL now through August 28th. They've also got some great deals going on with their living room furniture right now as part of their living room event. Again, that's all at universalfurniture.com/YHL.
So this week I'm digging something that makes cleaning easier, but it's not going to sound like a cleaning supply.
I'm intrigued.
What I'm digging is 3M Velcro. You know, that's these like command strips by 3M. But the use for them is that whenever I show a gallery wall or a whole bunch of art, people are like, how do you make that straight? Like, are you constantly straightening your frames? How annoying. My hack is if you put one strip of the 3M Velcro behind it, not necessarily even hanging on that, because I like to hang things on nails. It feels more secure to me. But I'll use the 3M strip just in the bottom right corner. Arbitrarily. Whenever I dust that gallery, guess what, guys? It stays exactly where it is. So I am not constantly running around straightening my picture frames. They generally stay exactly where they need to be because of that little strip of Velcro. And I like to buy these big multi-packs of it. I hate when I run out of it. It's actually something I think is a good like housewarming gift to give a big pack of it to someone.
I like them also because you can cut them. So sometimes if you have a really big strip, you can cut it in half or trim it down just so it fits, you know, in the corner or the slim frame.
Exactly. Well, I've almost run out and I've cut them vertically. So it makes two skinny strips of it instead
of
one.
Well, you have to cut them vertically because you need the pull tab at the bottom.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I thought you were saying cut them horizontally. No, that would be really bad.
No, Sherry.
That's a quick tip within my word digging.
You're welcome, everyone.
But I'll link to the multi-pack I like for them. It's like a little pack of a bunch of sizes and they're helpful because depending on what you're trying to hang.
I think they actually call them picture hanging Velcro or something. Well, they don't say Velcro because that's a registered name.
You're right. Picture hanging.
Hook and loop.
Oh, is that what they call them?
I think that's a generic term. I don't think they call them that.
I thought it was 3M Velcro, but maybe it's not. I think it's command is what they call them.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll link to those in the show notes because I actually think if you have a gallery or frames going up your staircase or frames in your mudroom that people are bumping, anywhere that your frames are shifting, guys, or when you dust them all that they get a little janky, it's like a hack that makes me feel on top of my life. It takes like 5 minutes to do and then you never think about it again.
Well, and this week I am digging a movie that is going to make me sound like I am very behind the times because this movie came out in June, but we just saw it. And so for all those other people who don't get out to the movies as often, Sherry and I both have to recommend The Big Sick.
It was so cute, you guys. We both laughed. I sobbed.
It has Kumail Nanjiani in it. He's that guy from Silicon Valley that you guys may know. He's hilarious. And this movie, The Big Sick, is sort of a dramatized retelling of how he met his real life wife, Emily.
I know. I love that it's based on a true story. It's just so cute. And he, who's the dad? I love the dad.
Oh, Ray Romano plays his future wife's dad. Basically, the plot of it. I don't think I'm giving anything away.
No, don't. I don't like any spoilers.
Well, but you have to know why it's called The Big Sick.
She gets sick.
Yeah, she gets sick. And so Camille has to meet her parents and sort of deal with caring for her when they hadn't known each other before.
Yeah, and also is confronted by his family who wants him to have an arranged marriage to like a nice Pakistani girl. Yes. And there's just layers of humor, and it's such a love story. And the fact that it's based on a true story, and stay for the credits because there are pictures in the credits of real life people depicted in the movie. And it's just... I loved it. It was like a feel-good comedy, but I sobbed a whole lot when she was sick.
Yeah, it's a good rom-com for a couple because it's funny and romantic. That's why they call it a romantic comedy.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. And happy Eclipse Day, guys!
And while I fully expect that no one will be playing our podcast during the actual eclipse, we do still love to hear what you guys do while you listen. Like Steph Waggy on Instagram, who listens while sailing the Mediterranean on a boat she and her partner are fixing up.
Yeah, now they listen to it together, which you know we appreciate whenever you guys can share our podcast with a friend, family member, boatmate, whoever. It's a huge help to us.
And don't forget to check out younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode, like some of our favorite places to stash paper clutter.
And those paint colors that are already trending for 2018.
Later.
Bye. Kind of like how they call Jennifer Lopez J-Lo or Puff Daddy P. Diddy. We like a shortening. We like the rom-com. Instead of romantic comedy.
You think P. Diddy is a shortening of Puff Daddy?
It's like his alter ego. Remember when Snoop Dogg was Snoop Lion for a second and then he was Snoop Dogg? And then there was ODB was Big Baby Jesus. Do you remember that?
No.
Then he went back to ODB.